Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad that you are here. Listen, we are in the business of prescribing hope for healthy families, and today will be no different. We have a frequent guest and friend of the show, author Christy Bolwer, today. She is first a passionate follower of Christ, and she is also wife to who she calls a hunky man named Troy. She's the mom of three beautiful kids, and she has a very deep desire to set people free from the chains of fear and anxiety. She founded and leads the nonprofit organization Fearless Unite, and through conferences, workshops, Bible studies, devotionals, her own podcast, she speaks and writes about these and shares her deeply personal story. Now, you may have heard Christy on the program before. If you haven't, go back and check out her episodes. We have talked about her book, Nervous Breakthrough: Finding Freedom from Fear and Anxiety in a World That Feeds It. And she very candidly, authentically, transparently shares her own struggle with anxiety. And we have also talked about church hurt that is all related and wrapped up in this. And today we are going to continue our conversation about mental health. And Christy, we're so glad to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Jessica, I'm so grateful for the work you do and thankful for the opportunity to talk today. I appreciate you.
Well, here we are. We just said, even before we started, that this is something, mental health, anxiety, we can talk about this all day, every day, like just all the time, because it is continuing to dominate just the news headlines that we see. It is dominating conversation we're having, whether that's at our kids' school or whether that's, you know, grocery store magazine headlines. I mean, everywhere we go, everyone is still talking about mental health. And Christy, I see this divide in the public narrative. You know, there's a faction of people who say, like, enough already, like, get on with it, get over it. Like, why can't you just suck it up? And there's other people, you know, another faction that's saying, like, hey, it's not enough. It's not enough. Absolutely. It's awful. So where is the truth in those two extremes? What are you seeing in your ministry? And what is your perspective when we're looking at the landscape of our collective mental health?
Well, I wonder if you could say something like, the stats don't lie. You know what I mean? Like, if we need to just suck it up and do better and we're tired of talking about this, then how come we're not seeing transformations? How come we're not seeing people getting better? And I've really, really been focusing in on the youth and that tween population and then like the college age group. And we're seeing this massive increase and mental health concerns. And, oh gosh, Jessica, I read this, it was by Clarify Health, who put out this stat that said mental health hospitalizations have increased by 124% from 2016 to 2020. Something is going on, Jessica. And the reason why that grieves me and the reason why it just slays me is because I was one of those hospitalizations. I have been there. I have gone to the hospital for severe panic and anxiety disorder at a mental breakdown point where I just didn't, the hospitalization actually made it worse. And so I am just on this mission to educate and empower and teach and let people know that, like, these stats are not lying. We have an epidemic. We have a problem right now, and specifically with our youth. That is just, we've got to do something about it. So I definitely feel this pressure point for us to talk about it and to, you know, collectively as the church say, what are we going to do about this?
I agree with you. I mean, the numbers don't lie, and there's a lot of argument about why the numbers are increasing. And you know, Christy, I mean, I'm a nurse practitioner. I work in the community, and I look and see daily I am seeing kids who are voicing suicidal ideation. I mean, every single day. Mm-hmm. When I was working in the community regional hospital, that was pretty much all that I did. Just in your local run-of-the-mill emergency room, what I would see was kids who had attempted suicide because of severe anxiety and depression that was unmanaged. And they come in and they're in crisis. We're not prepared to handle them. We're having them wait for hours, sometimes days, in the emergency room, which is not a great environment for kids. And then usually what would happen would be they would be admitted to my service. They would have to wait for up to 3 days for a long-term assessment team to come and say, okay, is it safe for you to go home, or do you need to go to an inpatient therapy place? But like you said, Christy, a lot of those places are not very good. But what we're looking at is, what are the factors that are driving this? And like I said, in academic debates, I am seeing so much heated argument. But the facts also don't lie, Christy. We cannot deny that social media is not a major player in all of this. And figuring out exactly why and exactly how, I think we're still learning. But the things that I see, this is just my personal opinion and what I have observed in practice and what I see, is that living at the speed of a smartphone is exhausting. We cannot keep up with all of the world's bad news that is delivered to us in seconds. And it makes us feel like the world is darker, the world is scarier, the world is less safe. I also think that we can't stand the pressure of having to feel like we're on all the time. We don't just enjoy our daily life. We're thinking either, should I post this on social media or should I not post this? And if I do post this, what should I post about? And then let me manage the responses. And if I do post it, and then somebody responds, you know, negatively, how do I respond to that? And if I don't post it, but somebody else posts it, I mean, you can see all of this that is just, you know, really feeding, I think, a life of anxiety that we're having. Now, as adults, we can look at that and think, okay, I don't mess with that. I'm not even on social media. But for kids, they are growing up where this is normal. This is expected. Mm-hmm. They are expected to manage some sort of online presence. And I hear from parents every day who are fighting, saying, no, you can't have it. And it just seems like, but why? How can I be so different? So what do you see? What do you see the statistics and what you're seeing in your own family and your ministry about why teen anxiety is growing so rapidly? What's your perspective, Christy?
So, Jessica, I would like to answer that in two parts. I think the first is, what is happening? What are the factors, like what you just asked me? But then you touched on it a little bit before you even asked me the question. It's the response to what we're doing. And could we look at it differently? Could we change it? So first and foremost, the factors. I think absolutely it's social media and the exposure, not only to show up and have this influence that isn't truly authentic, is damaging our souls, whether you're a teen or an adult. The other thing is the exposure to negative news. We were not meant to understand all of the knowledge of good and evil. I mean, it is truly like overwhelming how much negative news, to the point where I have a hard policy in my own life, a boundary of no scrolling, because my soul cannot handle all of the negativity that's going on. And I feel like if I want to show up best for my family and my children and for the people that I'm leading in my ministry, my best needs to go to them. And every time I get pinged or I see something negative in social media, I am taking away energy and good space that I want to dedicate to my family and to the people that I'm leading in my ministry. And I think that we are not paying attention to how pervasive it is and how much it is taking from our souls. I also think for teens, the academic and social pressures is insane. Like the amount of extracurricular activities that we're all supposed to be in and what we're supposed to do. A quick little story. My daughter was in softball. She's a tween. And the coach kind of came into me and was like, hey, I need your commitment by XYZ. And this was still a year away, Jessica. And I was like, okay. Like the scripture, do not conform to the patterns of this world, just kind of came to me. And I was like, okay, I can either conform to this pressure of having to give a commitment to my tween daughter to be in a competitive softball league, or I can just say, hey, you know what? We don't know. And if there's space for us, when it comes time, then we'll take it. But for right now, I can't give you that commitment. And I just wonder, what would the world look like if we stopped conforming to these quote unquote patterns that we think we have to say yes to, when really we have the autonomy to say, you know what? I don't think I'm going to commit to that right now. And I just, so there's so much with the team factors that are happening. And then now, because of all that stuff, if that's not enough, then the response to it. You mentioned something really eye-opening, like how long it takes for someone to receive clinical help when they're in a state of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So what our ministry is now doing is we've created a soul shepherding program where we step in as mental health advocates. We're taking coaching courses through Light University that helps us be mental health advocates that can step into that middle ground and say, I just took a call from a woman last night who got sent away to Florida to a mental health facility. It was the most damaging experience she's ever went through. And I stepped in and coached her through that and helped her get some relief, some prayer, and some help in the middle ground before she can actually get the help that she needs. We need more Christian women of God that are willing to step up and say, you know what? I'm willing. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. And I think that we are so intimidated by credentials and you have to be an LPC or you have to be a pastor or you have to, when it's like, you know what? The Holy Spirit qualifies you to love and encourage people well when they're struggling and to be a comfort. And so I'm equipping a team to step out, and we're going to start with teenage girls first to be soul shepherds. So I think it's a two-part approach. It's understanding what we're going through and having a different response to the problems we're facing.
Those are all really great observations, Christy. And I want to go back and talk a little bit more. You made me think of some other things, the factors that are driving this. And then I want to address the balance that you're talking about and having this, because you talked about the negative content that kids and families, frankly, we are exposed to on social media. But one thing that we didn't address, Christy, is the violent content and sexualized content. Mm-hmm. And obviously those fall under negative, but I feel like those are two completely different ball games. I mean, we've got the online bickering and trolling and bullying that happens. I mean, those are two different ball games, because we have online bickering and bullying and just general incivility. But then we've also got things that if you are not regularly online, you cannot imagine how the world has changed. I mean, we do not have paper-covered magazines that are in a gas station anymore. We have got really explicit, awful things that are continually just going through the scroll. And kids are naturally curious. They can click on something, then all of a sudden they're sucked into an algorithm. They feel bad because their thumb moved faster than their prefrontal cortex. I mean, that is definitely an issue, Christy, that I'm seeing. And the other issue is COVID. We have to be really honest in looking at past generational markers. I mean, thinking about those generational iconic questions of where were you on VE Day? Where were you when JFK was shot? Where were you when the Challenger exploded? Where were you when 9/11 happened? This generation will ask, where were you when quarantine started? When the rug, they already felt the world was unsafe. And then we just ripped the rug right out from under them, because this is a generation that was born post 9/11. They don't know a world before TSA, or when we used to play outside and come in when the streetlights came on and drink from the hose and not have any GPS location for parenting. I mean, it was a very different time. And Christy, I think what this generation saw then was very bitter debates about what to do, what not to do, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. And we started to see this really ugly divide. And then all of that happened in the presence of, okay, now we're all in the home, but we've got families who are digitally connected to each other and to the rest of the world, but they are extremely relationally disconnected. We have gotten to where we text each other in our own home, or you can all sit on the couch together and you're all watching different things. I mean, even things like watching media together. When we used to watch a program together, everyone would have the same emotional experience watching a program, and then we would talk about it together. How do you talk about how you watched five different things last night and nobody's talking about anything? Christy, I think all all of these things are really important. And when we come back from this break, I want to talk about exactly what you were talking about, not being intimidated by credentials and stepping in when we see that anxiety roar. So we will be right back talking with Christy Boulware about Nervous Breakthrough, finding freedom from fear and anxiety in a world that feeds it.
People have value. But just where does it come from?
God created us in His image, as male and female.
But the enemy is deceiving so many.
We like to shake our fist at God and say, why did you make me this way? I don't like it. I'm going to define who I am for myself.
We must stand on God's truth.
Can we change God's words? Can we change the tense? It's just the tense of the verb. Come on. To be able to get along with everybody, we don't have the luxury to edit what God has said.
In His Image is a life-changing film that takes you through scripture and shares powerful testimonies to destroy Satan's attempts to pervert God's perfect design.
There's only one last major holdout in society to shed light on what the truth is, and that is the church.
Watch it again or for the first time, anytime on AFA Streaming, streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net.
I love you, Lord. All my days, I've been held in your hands. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God.
Well, that is a great song to lower your anxiety and just remind you that God is in control. I love that song and thinking about that line that all my life you have been faithful. Whether I'm anxious or depressed or stressed or whatever it is, God is in control. And friends, today we're talking with Christy Boulware, the author of Nervous Breakthrough, Finding Freedom from Fear and Anxiety in a World That Feeds It. And the audiobook actually releases today. So you can listen to this book online and get Christy's perspective on having personally dealt with anxiety and now running a ministry that ministers to others who feel that as well. And Christy, before the break, we were in the middle of a great discussion just about we have both agreed that anxiety is still a problem. We are not effectively addressing it as a society. And you talked, Christy, about the importance of stepping in, how medical treatment can be a negative experience for some. And I acknowledge that and I see that. And I think it's so important for us to have a balance here, because we cannot, if we don't know anything about mental health, we cannot sit here and armchair quarterback a diagnosis and, you know, try to figure that out on our own. But at the same time, there is not enough help and you can't afford it or access it if you need it in many cases. And we absolutely need immediate intervention for people to come alongside others who are struggling. And I think, Christy, it's really a disservice because in our society, we wear stress as a badge of honor. And there's so much social acceptability about managing your stress. But anxiety is like, oh, you're one of those. Okay, what about that? So let's talk about people just acknowledging they have anxiety, finding out, like, is this just kind of anxiety I'm struggling with? Is this like a diagnosis? How do I recognize it? And how do we start that conversation, especially when parents see that in their kids? Christy, what advice do you have?
I think we can't fix a problem or help with a problem or comfort a problem if we don't first acknowledge that we have a problem. And I think for me, I remember the moment where the ER doctor looked at me after a flu test had been run, and I literally felt like I was dying, having a heart attack and suicidal ideation, like you had mentioned. And he looks at me and he says, Christy, you know, you've got severe panic and anxiety disorder. And I remember thinking, there's no way, not me. And I think so many of us just are not aware of what stress and anxiety does to our bodies. So could we all collectively say, okay, There's an epidemic of fear and anxiety. What are the smoke alarms? What do we need to start paying attention to? What do we need to be aware of? And I think the way that it manifests perhaps in youth versus adults looks a little different. And I think as parents, are we first willing to look at the mirror ourselves and say, are we dealing with any stress, anxiety, fear, worry? Are we swiping things under the rug? Because if we're doing it to ourselves, the chances of us being open and honest with our children and really looking at the fact that maybe they're dealing with fear and stress and anxiety, it is important to look at as well. So are we honest with ourselves? So then we can turn around and be honest with our children. And I think pull yourself up by your bootstraps, try a little harder, just keep going, keep going, keep going, is creating even more anxiety. So are we willing to look at what's really going on and have honest conversations with our children? Now, Jessica, I think the problem is if we're talking about parents to children, parents don't know what to do. They don't know what to ask their children. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to coach them through it, because either they're dealing with it themselves and overwhelmed with it themselves, or they're just like, I don't know what to do. And so I think we trust the doctor or the counselor when really we need to get educated ourselves to help be supplements to our doctors, our physicians, our counselors, our pastors, and not just put all of the pressure on them to help with this epidemic that we're facing as well.
I agree with that. I think that families really should be involved in their care because, you know, I'm speaking as the healthcare provider here in this conversation, Christy, and when people come to me, I can only offer as much help as the information I'm given. And so if parents, you know, aren't willing to have that conversation, because I see a lot of parents who are like, no, it's blood sugar. Like, I want you to find something physical because I don't want this label. I don't want this going on for a long time. But, you know, the hard truth, Christy, is that first of all, parents ask me all the time, like, what are signs that you know your child is struggling with anxiety? And what I say to parents, Christy, is that you know the signs. You see them. You know when your kid is feeling anxious. Just a lot of times we put it off. Now, if they have a sore throat, if they have an earache, we don't put those things off. Like, we're going to call immediately and say, check this out, because there's no social stigma associated with an ear infection and there's a quick fix, right? Like, we know we can look at it. It's very objective. And then we know it'll be better tomorrow. So we want that quick fix. But I think accepting something like anxiety, we're like, okay, I don't know if this is real or if this is not, and I don't really want to deal with this, and there's no pink stuff to give me that's going to make it quick. There's no test that you can do that's telling me it's definitely it. And so you're just wandering in this gray area, which is why it's so important for parents to get educated. And Christy, I'll give a spoiler alert for anxiety from a medical perspective, how it should go from a primary care situation. Most anxiety and depression in kids is very easily managed, and it's managed by things that are super easy. It's eating healthy foods. It's going to sleep at night. It's getting good exercise. It's having meaningful relationship connections. All of those things are usually going to fix anxiety, but we first have to recognize it, accept it, and then agree to live in that kind of gray space and have some tolerance for something that may not go away overnight. But the important reason for parents to recognize this, Christy, is because if we do this, especially with our kids, we have so much better success in retraining their brains and making this a short-term struggle versus a long-term health issue. So what do you think are ways that parents can talk to their kids about this? Because I think I see a lot of relationship disconnect here, like just trying to navigate that and figure out like what is really going on. And the truth is, Christy, this is going to step on some toes, but I will go here because I have been that mom. I think a lot of times as parents, we don't want to accept that our kids are anxious, because if we tell people that, that means I have clearly done something wrong as a parent. That's what we feel. Like, we feel like I psychologically damaged them. I'm not giving them a happy home. They're not happy. And I don't want anybody to know that. Oh, that was so hard to say out loud, but I have felt that way before when one of my children was struggling with anxiety. What do you think, Christy?
Yeah, I mean, there's no room for pride when someone's dealing with anxiety. And, you know, pride will humble you quickly if you aren't willing to, anxiety will humble you quickly if you're not willing to look at it. And so I think what is so important is a couple of things that you mentioned. Like, I felt like I was having a heart attack. My stomach felt like I was going to vomit, and I like couldn't decide if I needed to go to the bathroom or if I needed to throw up. Like, there was so much going on physically with my body. Chunks of hair were coming out of my head, racing thoughts, rapid heartbeat, like all these things. And yet when the doctor said, you've got severe panic and anxiety disorder, I wanted to say, what? You're crazy. So I think what happens is we don't want to acknowledge that something mental can create physical consequences in our body. So I think that's important first. Like you said, the sore throat or the earache, we're going to take care of that. And it's because we feel it, we sense it, we know. But we don't really want to come to grips with the fact that something mental can create the butterflies in our stomach, or, you know, the tension headache in our back. Like we think, oh, it's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. So I think first, like, realizing that the mental health part of this creates physical consequences in our body. So I think that's so important. The other thing is, parents, I think we need to start asking more questions that are engaging with our children. Like, here's what's so wild, Jessica. The other day, the Holy Spirit is the greatest encourager, the greatest comforter, the greatest guider. And when we are walking with the Lord, He is going to prompt us. Are you going to listen? So what wound up happening, I have two teen boys, and I just had this idea of, like, talk to them about porn. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that, Lord. Like, I don't know how, I don't know what, you know. And then I was just like, you know what? If the Holy Spirit is laying that on my mind and heart, there has to be a reason. So I just, I went to my boys separately, and I just asked him a very simple question. I said, you guys, I know that there's a lot of not good stuff out there for your eyes to consume. I just wanted to ask you, how are you doing with that? Like, is there stuff in front of you that is tempting you to look at it? Da, da, da. And it was like, I wasn't, you know, accusing them of anything. I just, how's your heart? How are you doing with that? Like, I know it's out there. I'm not stupid, but, like, how are you doing? And both of them, it was like, they almost felt like this, like, sigh of relief, like, oh, I can finally talk to my mom about this kind of thing. And I'll keep the details of our conversation private, but I'm telling you what, it was a holy, beautiful, amazing conversation. And I think there's a lot of anxiety that takes place around shame. Like, my boys don't want to look at this stuff, but it's out there and they're seeing it, and they wanted to have a safe place to talk to their mom about it, where I wasn't going to condemn them or make them feel bad, and give them a safe opportunity to talk to me about that. And I'm telling you what, like, there was so much peace in my heart and their heart after we had a beautiful conversation about it.
I cannot agree more with you, Christy, because I see so many kids who come to me exactly with what you're describing, those really severe physical symptoms. And the symptoms you were describing that you experienced do say that, yeah, that's severe. That rises to the level of needing to be diagnosed, and we need to do better at recognizing that early. But the process you're describing is called somatization, and that's where our brain can only process so much psychological trauma before it manifests itself through our physical body. So a lot of times, like, when parents come in and their kids are having stomach aches, like you were describing, they think, when I say it's anxiety, they're like, oh, so the stomach aches aren't real. No, those are very real physical symptoms of psychological trauma. It doesn't make them any less real. They're just from a different place. And so I think that's really important. So what happens, Christy, is that, I mean, I this has happened to me hundreds and hundreds of times, where I'll have a kid come in for a stomach ache, for a headache, for joint pain, for sleeping problems. And I start to talk with them, and 9 times out of 10, I will tell you, Christy, that I will uncover some sort of burden that they're carrying secretly, something they've been exposed to, not that they're keeping secret from their parents because they're being devious and deceptive and they, you know, don't want to tell their parents. They don't know what to do with it. And it feels so improper to talk about some of these things they're exposed to online. Like I was talking about earlier, if you're not living in this world, I think you'd be absolutely shocked at the depravity that kids are exposed to. And they feel like, I don't know, like, is it okay to talk to my parents who I love and respect about that? Like, as much as we think, I don't want to expose my kids to things that like that, our kids are thinking, I don't want to expose my parents to things like that. Like, that would be embarrassing. So having that open door is so good. And because they have shame, but they don't really know why, they may see something that makes their body respond even, and they think, I don't know what to do with this. But really, we need to tell them, your body may have had the right response in the wrong circumstance. And those kinds of things are so important. And I think, you know, especially Christy, I have the best conversations with my kids before they go to bed. Like when I pick them up from school or when we're home during the day and it's busy, I may ask them how their day was and they'll tell me quick, fine. But I found that investing in going and telling them good night, having a bedtime routine, they will more often than not read to me what I call the war and peace of their lives. Like they will tell me and open those chapters and tell them. So I would love, I know you talk specifically about calming your mind before you go to sleep. How do we do that? How do we help our kids do that?
Why, you said war and peace? What did you call it?
The war and peace of their lives. Like, let me read you a chapter out of this epic saga. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff comes out from everywhere that I think, where was this at 4 o'clock this afternoon when I wasn't so tired, right? But I'm going to sit there for it.
Yeah. Oh, man. And you are, and it's like, you go like, okay, I'm ready. I'm so tired, but like, put my hot tea down. It's time to go. Like, this is time. I think I love that you have a bedtime routine, and we have that in our family as well. And we always pray over our children before bed. I think that's incredibly important as well. I have really taught my children to keep a journal by their bed. And when I've encouraged them, when you wake up sleepless, and you wake up with your thoughts racing, and you wake up and you like just turn on that little lamplight, open up your journal and start writing those things down. Write down what is robbing you of sleep right now. What are those thoughts? Because we know that our thoughts can quickly snowball and get out of control. And so there is power in getting those thoughts out. And then I've taught my children, hey, you know, if you had a midnight journaling session, talk to mom about it in the morning so we can talk about those negative thoughts. And then we always rewire those thoughts to what does God say? What does God really say? Because inevitably it'll be like, I feel like this friend is bullying me and I don't know what to do about it. Or I think I'm going to fail my math test. Or, you know, I really feel lonely. I feel like I'm the only Christian boy on my path right now. What do I do about that? You know, and it's like when you can talk to your children about those midnight journaling sessions, it's unbelievable what actually comes out.
I agree, Christy. I agree. And we are up against a break here. But when we come back, I want to talk more about the faith element of this and how do we surrender these problems to God as parents and teach our children that God is in control even when the world feels like it's out of control. We'll answer that when we come back. Meet Kelsey. When she found out she was pregnant, she wasn't sure where to turn. But after meeting with the counselors at a preborn network clinic who loved and supported her, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat on a free ultrasound, she chose life.
When a mother looks at her child through a sonogram, it does something to you. You know, I ended up deciding to keep my son, who is now 5 years old today. He's amazing. He brings absolute joy to my heart. I could not imagine life without him. Not only did they help me save his life, they saved my life.
By introducing a woman to her baby on ultrasound, a baby's chance at life doubles. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. For Dr. Nurse Mama, I'm Jessica Peck. Well, you know, that really does make me want to say hallelujah, because I'm telling you, in today's world that just seems like it has gone completely mad. I look around, I don't even recognize the world that my kids are growing up in. But I think as adults in this world, in this generation, we give so many negative messages to Generation Z and Gen Alpha. We tell them this is a terrible time to be alive, that the world has just gone crazy and that there is no hope and that things are awful. What a terrible message. And then we wonder why this generation is so anxious. Well, as adults, we have told them to be anxious. We have conditioned them to be anxious. And then we shame them for being anxious. And guys, we have got to do better. We are talking today about that very thing to author Christy Boulware. Her audiobook, Nervous Breakthrough, Finding Freedom from Fear and Anxiety in a World That Feeds It, releases today. And we are having a really candid conversation around the fact that anxiety really does exist. Yes, there is a pandemic of anxiety. And yes, we've got to deal with it. And yes, there is hope in that. And so, Christy, before we jump back into our conversation, I just want to give our listeners a little recap on that, because anxiety is really common. And if you're wondering, what do I do about it? You're sitting at home thinking either, I'm feeling anxious, my kids are feeling anxious. The question that you need to answer is this impacting your everyday life? Is it impacting your ability to do the things that you have to do and the things you want to do? Are you having trouble getting up and going to work or school? Are you modifying your schedule? Is your family modifying their routine? Are you not going somewhere or going somewhere differently or leaving early? If you are modifying your lifestyle, that is a signal. As Christy says, that is a smoke signal that something is wrong and you really need to address this. This is why I think it's so important to have a very good relationship with a primary care provider you know and you trust, who can help you navigate this and figure out, is this just a temporary feeling that just needs some attention to the health in your life? Or is this something that needs further help that is really serious? Most of the cases are going to fall in that temporary, mild, that can be addressed by things we know, but we just don't do. So let me give you three things that you can do to improve your mental health in a hurry. The first thing is getting good sleep, having good nutrition, and exercise. So sleep, nutrition, and exercise all together. So imagine I'm seeing kids in clinic and I'll ask them, how are you feeling? And they tell me they're feeling very anxious. Well, how did you sleep last night? Well, I really don't sleep well. I scroll on my phone before bed. I only sleep about 4 or 5 hours. I wake up frequently. And then I ask them, okay, what have you eaten? All junk food. Have you moved your body? Nope. I've sat and scrolled on my phone and played video games. And then we wonder why we don't feel good. So sleep, nutrition, exercise is number one. The second is having a connection to a relationship, a meaningful relationship. And for kids, parents, that needs to be us. They need to have a safe space, just as Christy was describing, where they can talk to us about the hard things that are going on in their life. And number three is gratitude. Intentionally showing gratitude, whether that's through journaling, through prayer, through conversation, the body of literature on gratitude is enormous. So much so that my friend and colleague, Dr. Bernadette Melnick, calls it vitamin G, because it is that essential to our being. So Christy, in the last segment, we were just starting to talk about this intersection of faith and mental health. And, you know, it's really hard for me because I see parents who come in and they'll accept strep throat, but anxiety, they're like, oh, my faith must not be strong enough. They don't say that if their kid gets strep throat. Like, I just didn't pray away the strep throat enough. But we try to do that for things like anxiety and depression. What do you see as this intersection of faith and mental health?
think that we can't separate all the three parts. Okay, we're body, soul, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So if all we do is focus maybe on the spirit, because we're praying, but we don't do the things that you just mentioned, like sleep, eat well, and, you know, make sure that we have connections with outside people, then we're out of balance. And somewhere along the line, we've prioritized maybe the body. We're saying like, well, just give me a pill for that, or let me go see a doctor, or what. And then we don't put enough balance in our emotions, our mental health, well-being, like our emotions and things that are going on in our mental health, and maybe someone has wounded us and we need to work through forgiveness and we're actually in a bitter cycle, or perhaps, you know, we have gotten into this really bad, you know, rhythm of eating just tons of sugar, and our body is completely inflamed and we've got joint pain and we're not sleep. And so it's like, where did we all of a sudden go wrong where we're just paying attention to one part? I like to call it like a tricycle idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I was riding a tricycle right now, and there's three wheels, body, soul, and spirit, and one of the wheels was flat, let's say it was our body wheel, you know, and it had, like, I would not be able to roll properly on that tricycle. Something's wrong. All equal parts of air need to be in our tires for us to really thrive and do well. And so we've got to get back to the, hey, let's pay attention to all three things. Doctors are good, but doctors should be encouraging our faith and where mm-hmm. are we with Jesus, and how is our walk with him, and what are we doing there? And then pastors, you know, it can't be all about our faith. How are we having our counseling appointments? Are we checking in with our soul? Are we checking in with our primary care physicians? Are we doing the things to manage all three parts of our body? And I think when we get better at looking at the person holistically and not just from one side or the other, I think we're going to have a lot more healing and growth and transformation in the mental health world.
I completely agree with that. It does take all of those things. And again, I'm going to say it again and again. That's why it's so important to have a primary care provider. You have a relationship that you trust that shares a similar worldview, so they can come alongside you in all of these things. And, you know, I think it's really hard for us to communicate what we need. When we have a cold, when we get the flu, people know what to do. They bring chicken soup or a casserole. If you live in the South, let's be honest, you know, they're going to bring you a casserole. They're going to bring you some tissues. They're going to, you know, give you their suggestions for binge watching a show if you're stuck in bed or something like that. But when somebody has anxiety, you know, some of the symptoms that you were describing earlier, Christy, especially those symptoms that with panic attack, people do not know what to do. And, you know, I think about one of my children who had an immune deficiency, my daughter, when she was younger, and it resulted in a panic disorder because she had so many traumatic things that happened to her as a result of that. And I remember being at camp one year, I was the nurse, and she was having a panic attack, and she came running into my little cabin that I had, and she locked herself in my room and didn't want, and her friends came running after, and they were so worried, you know, because they thought they had hurt her feelings. They had no conception of what panic was or anything like that. They thought, you know, did she see a snake? Like, did we hurt her feelings? Like, what in the world happened? And she was so devastated, just did not want them to see her in that state. And you know, Christy, I just remember in that moment standing on, I was inside the room with her and her friends were on the other side of this locked door. And I remember telling her, you know, you have support and love that is being offered to you on the outside and you've locked it out. So I remember opening the door and inviting those girls in and saying and explaining to them, this is what happens. This is what anxiety looks like. And when she feels this way, you need to give her a little physical space, but some emotional support. And these are some of the things that you can say that will make her feel better. And go find an adult and find this particular adult. You know, this is the one that you need to connect to, and they can help walk you through that. Well, now those friends had a mission. Like, they knew exactly what to do. I mean, to the point where it was like, okay, everybody back up. This is anxiety. We're all going to be calm here. You know, everybody just stay calm, give her some space. And we got this. And I thought, why don't we do this more, Christy? How do we communicate when we're feeling those things, the need for love and support, when we have such fear of people judging us?
I think that first it's because we don't understand. I mean, we truly don't understand anxiety. So I love what you just outlined there. It's clear communication. People cannot help you if you don't communicate what you need. And so partly if you're an anxiety sufferer, if you're someone that struggles with it, you have to, they're like ready statements. They're like, okay, I know what I need when this happens, and it's my responsibility to communicate. And I think that if as someone that is struggling with panic and anxiety can be armed and ready to communicate that, then that is, your loved ones are going to be able to support you so much better in that case, because that's a success story that you just shared. I mean, the girls rallied behind her. They knew what to do. It was like an action plan. And I think that that is brilliant and something that we can do better. We need to be able to communicate what we need. And for me, it is often I need space, but I'll tell my loved ones, don't give me too much space, because if I wind up like, give me a little bit, but then if I wind up isolating, I can go to a very dark place very, very quick. So there's this fine line of space and isolation. And I think looking at that in your teens is really important. If you start seeing them isolate so much, that they're saying no to all activities, all they're doing is scrolling, they're not having any communication with the outside world, that is a huge indicator that something else is going on. And I know it was for me too. I didn't want to deal. I didn't want to have to, you know, address anybody. It was just easier to be in a room, in a dark room by myself. And that can get dangerous quick.
Well, what do you hope, Christy, that people are going to take away from reading your book? You have shared so much great information and really made it more relatable, because I think so many people who struggle with anxiety, they struggle in secret and they experience it. They don't tell anybody. You have shared your story and finding hope and healing in your journey. What do you hope people will take away from your book?
There's a beautiful scripture that says, comfort others with the same comfort that God has given you. And I feel like that's it. That's the message, Jessica. I want people to first be aware of what they're experiencing, know that there is hope and that they can get through it. And then the most beautiful thing would be like a pay it forward button. You know, if you're struggling with it, what can you do to comfort someone else? I think so often we think that we have to be healed from anxiety and never have another panic attack or never feel stress or fear ever again to be able to be meaningful or impactful in our world. And that's just not true. That's a lie. You know, the goal is not to be fearless, but to learn to fear less. And I think that if we could just do a better job of sharing, you know, spreading comfort like confetti, you know, comforting people when they're in a hard space, empathizing with them, giving them compassion, loving them well, right where they're at. I mean, love goes so far, and we've lost the love of art, or the art of love so much with people. So I think what I want people to know is you can help. You can turn around and give comfort to someone else that's in need if you'll be aware of what you're experiencing and be able to work towards it, work towards healing.
I think that's really great insight, Christy, because when we think of the word fearless, we think like, oh, someone who doesn't have any fear. But that's actually not what it is. I feel like I just had a light bulb moment when you said that. It's like, no, we're not going to be absent of fear, but we can fear a little less. I mean, I think that's really a great point. The other important point that I think you have there is talking about the action plan, and the light bulb moment that I just have is, you know, Christy, as a primary care provider, I fill out asthma action plans all the time for school. They're actually required, right? We have the green zone, the yellow zone, and the red zone. And it tells everybody exactly what to do, what symptoms you're looking at, and then what to do in that moment. Why don't we have anxiety action plans? I feel like this great idea was just born right here on this show. We need anxiety action plans for school because it really is simple and straightforward, and we know what to do. And sometimes as humans, I feel like we just make this way more complicated. And a lot of that comes back to what you said earlier, Christy. It comes back to our pride. And we think, oh no, not me. I can manage my emotions. You know, I'm fine. I don't need anything. And sometimes God allows things in our life to just show us that we do need God. We do need to trust in Him. We do need to surrender. We are not perfect. We are failed, flawed human beings. And sometimes we have anxiety. Sometimes that's within our control. And sometimes it's not. So just to recap all of this as we're closing up here, I want to reemphasize, if you or someone you love and your family, your child is struggling with anxiety, and as Christy said, that can look really different for kids. That can look like not doing well in school. It can look like irritability and maybe even disrespect or conflict as they're trying to process those feelings. Go get evaluated by a primary care provider you know and trust. And in the meantime, get yourself educated on mental health issues and step in the immediate meantime with help and support, whether that's sleep, nutrition, exercise, providing a healthy relationship, or gratitude. Listen, Christy's book, her audiobook releases today, Nervous Breakthrough, Finding Freedom from Fear and Anxiety in a World That Feeds It. And in the meantime, friends, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And we'll see you right here next time, prescribing hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.